This is the BBC, with the Daily Minutes podcast. Oh no, it isn't. I mean, this is the Daily Minutes podcast. This is, however, not the BBC.
Daily Minutes Podcast number 1645, no, 1654, with today's bulletin, 19 June 2019. This is our bulletin of Wednesday. Daily Minutes Podcast is a podcast in either English or Dutch, or a mix of both, on several topics, with a strong focus on technical topics like amateur radio and shortwave listening. This podcast today will be in English. Today we have part 6 of our series on offshore radio, and at the end we have an episode number 16 of Slow Scan Radio with our data and images. Well, we have an approaching thunderstorm, so I don't know what the outcome of that will be, but if there's a severe thunderstorm, I will switch off all electronics here, so dmr.li might be off the air. I will try to have the podcast up and running then, so you can switch over to the podcast, which will stay up even if all electricity is down right here.
This excitement comes to you tonight from the King's Hall at Herne Bay, and this is the last of Radio City's dancing parties in the present series. And on the stage at this present moment, we have the Screaming Lord himself. So we'll take you now onto the stage at the King's Hall at Herne Bay. Well, folks, that is the first time that any live stage performance has ever been recorded for broadcasting of Screaming Lord Sutch, and that was his internationally renowned number, Jack the Ripper. I was going to interrupt the number to tell you what he was doing, that this is the most grotesque act that's ever been produced on any stage at any time. No wonder that some people say that Screaming Lord Sutch is a monster. But then again, it's only an act, and it's a really fantastic act too. You must see it when he's down your way next time. And this is a special recording for Radio City, and this is Reg Calvert signing off now from the King's Hall at Herne Bay.
The animals in today's Breakaway Club news and notes session, with many happy and good wishes to the future members of the Breakaway Club from all the outside members. That is a little thought for today for you. We've got to get out of this place by the animals. Don't forget the address for those communications and dedications and requests is the Breakaway Club, Radio City, number 7, Denmark. Hey, the old address. Oh, force of habit. Sorry, do it again. Radio City, Clifford House, 15 Clifford Street, London, W1. Okay, Breakaway Club, Clifford House, 15 Clifford Street, London, W1. And the Breakaway Club's news and notes for men and, of course, women on the run all around the countryside is heard at this time, 1:30 each day on 299 meters. So till next time tomorrow, bear in mind the motto as we go forward together, laughing and joking and giggling, because the whole country is behind you, like laughing, joking and giggling. The motto being, of course, meander with Macca. Breakaway people, meander with Macca.
Scratch along with Kath Kirby.
My baby does the hanky-panky.
That was so corny and such good fun. James, Tom Bell, Radio City Sound 14 this week on the City Survey. My Baby Does the Hanky Panky, Radio City Time Check and Macca's Music Show on 18 and a half minutes before the hour, 4 o'clock, news time at 4.
I would like to point out, if I may, that you are in fact listening to Ian McRae with, as he calls them, his hits of the day.
Well done. Oh, my God. Let's bring on the Kinks now, shall we?
Towards the end of 1965, negotiations started with Radio Caroline, as Dorothy Calvert explains.
Radio Caroline approached my husband with the idea of an amalgamation. This was to make Radio City a booster station for the Caroline network. When I say booster, I mean that the signals would be transmitted from the ship, and then with the aid of a larger transmitter and a better aerial, the signal would be boosted to a much higher power with a much greater coverage of England from Radio City. So the terms were agreed, and the advertising revenues were pooled. Radio Caroline started looking for a transmitter, and in the end informed my husband that they'd traced one and it was going to be delivered.
They supplied a transmitter, which was a which was flown in from America, built in 1941, I think, or thereabouts, or probably prior to that. It was running, apparently. We had a note written on it by the previous engineers that it was actually operating when Pearl Harbor was bombed. So that you can imagine how old it was. And it really was a monster. It weighed 5 tons in lumps. It then went to Holland, came out from Holland by tender. We got most of it up on the tower. I dropped one unit weighing about a ton that went in the water, for which we were all very sorry. We had to go pick the damn thing out, get some divers down there, pick it up, clean it up and put it to rights.
As it was, this transmitter never worked, and subsequently the deal fell through. Radio London were next with a takeover bid, this time for the radio station UKGM, United Kingdom Good Music. Plans were well advanced when, on Monday the 20th of June, 1966, a boarding party took over Radio City's fort and closed the station down. The raiders were led by Major Oliver Smedley, who owned, and allegedly hadn't been paid for, the old Radio Caroline transmitter. Radio London's Philip Birch takes up the story.
UKGM was because Reg Calvert, who ran what was called Radio City from a fort, wasn't doing particularly well. In fact, he was doing rather badly, because although there was a proliferation of pirates then, in fact, most of them weren't doing well at all. The great success was Radio London, and the second great success was 390. And 390 had a sort of a middle-of-the-road sweep music format, and Radio London had a top 40. So Reg came to me with the idea that why don't we take over his fort, which was very similar to 390's, and use it for a second radio station in the sweep music, the good music category. And I thought that this would be fine, and did my sums on the back of an envelope, and it seemed to be viable, and I was pretty sure that we could put out as good a sweet music station as 390. And so we agreed to go ahead and take him over, as it were. I think he was going to cling to something like 10% of the equity, and we were going to take over 90% of it. It was that kind of an arrangement. I remember going over the facilities for his staff and being very unimpressed. I went out, you see, and I didn't like it, and the way he was, because he was doing it on a shoestring, and I felt that it ought to be done in a much more professional way. And I thought the first thing I would do would be to put in, you know, nice rooms for the staff on there to make it an attractive place to live. So I believe that we'd had some timber delivered, which was going to be the beginnings of rooms for the DJs. But we actually hadn't signed our agreement or anything of that sort. And his staff were still working on it, and it was still his Radio City. But it never came to be because his fort, I mean, this is all history now, but his fort was invaded by a couple of characters and a lot of seamen. The seamen were on strike at the time, and so they were hired to sort of take over, and they took over Reg's fort by force.
Dramatic news tonight from Shivering Sands off the Kent coast. A party of police are said to be on their way out to the wartime fort there, following reports that the pirate radio station on it, Radio City, had been taken over by a boarding party.
Now, you're one of the men who came aboard. Tell me, who are you and why did you come?
Well, my name is Elf. We were engaged as riggers to report to Terrace Pier at 11:30 that night. We were coming down, as far as we knew, we were coming down to do a normal rigging job. Well, after we got well down the river, we were informed then that what we were actually for was to come aboard here and stand by and protect these people's equipment. And when...
Protected against what?
Protected. He said that it was his gear and he was going to take it ashore when he got permission from ashore people.
This is the man who hired you?
That's it.
Meanwhile, Red arrived back in London, was told that his appointment with Smedley was arranged for noon. So he went along, and there was Smedley, Kitty Black, Commander Horsley, and a Mr. Lovett. And they confronted him with the boarding party and a piece of paper which they wanted Retch to sign, signing away 50% of Radio City profits.
Now, Smedley, who was out in the cold, I presume, decided that he wanted a cut in the Radio City London deal. And to that end, sent out his thugs to take over the station, went round to see Reg and said, look, we've got your station, we want half the proceeds or we're not going to let you go back on the air. Reg, of course, didn't like this. He rang me up and said, what are we going to do? And I suggested that it should be dealt with really from the source of the trouble. You know, that source, that's trouble should be dealt with, and he went to deal with it, presumably.
Stand by. Here is a Radio London News Bulletin.
Dateline Wednesday, June the 22nd. Essex. William Oliver Smedley has been charged with the murder of Reg Calvert, the head of Radio City, who was found dead in a house in Saffron Walden this morning. Smedley was remanded in custody for a fortnight. Mr. Calvert died from a gunshot wound in the chest. The next news on Radio London is at 2:30. This is Keith Skews reporting.
At 9 o'clock on Sunday evening, the 26th of June, the boarding party left, and within an hour, Radio City was back on the air.
This is Radio City broadcasting on 299 metres in the medium wave band. And I guess you've all read in the newspapers or heard on radio or TV the events of the past week as far as the station is concerned. So there's nothing more I can say right now than on behalf of fellow DJs Tom Edwards and Alan Clark, technicians Ian West and Phil Perkins, engineers Tony Pine and Paul Elvey, it's pretty good to be back again with you on the 299.
The station continued and things started to get back to near normal. Unfortunately, this situation wasn't to last. On the 8th of February 1967, Mrs. Dorothy Calvert was charged under the Wireless Telegraphy Act.
And I was summoned by Scotland Yard under the Wireless Telegraphy Act. This act means that you cannot transmit or run a broadcasting station or a radio in England without a licence. Of course, we understood we were outside territorial waters and we didn't need one, which was proved on the one hand and disproved on the other. We were taken to court. My solicitor prepared a very good case and we proved that we were outside territorial waters and also the fact that the court was not empowered to try this case because we were on the high seas. Unfortunately, we were found guilty and my instructions had been that that night had to be the last night for broadcasting. The boys closed down. It was a very, very moving time. Very sad. We all cried. But there was it. That was the death of Radio City.
And as you've probably heard, ladies and gentlemen, our managing director, Mrs. Dorothy Calvert, was fined £100 today at Southend and has stated that she'll not appeal against the findings of the case, which means tonight, of course, at midnight, Radio City goes off the air for the last time, apparently, because we're operating within territorial waters. And during the next 60 minutes or so, through until that final hour of midnight for us at any rate, we'll be talking to all the various disc jockeys on duty at present on the station. That's Alan Clark, Ian McRae, Paul Kramer, and RWB. And I think that perhaps at this time you might like to meet the boys off duty, as it were, and find a bit more about them and Radio City away from the turntables. And we have all the lads, in actual fact, in the studio right now, all the DJs. We have Alan, we have Ian, and we have Ross, and not forgetting Paul. I don't know who's going to start off the conversation. I would explain to you that I'm in a different part of the studio and they're sort of just behind me and I can't really see what they're doing, but I'll switch up the switch, lads. Don't say anything naughty because you're on the air, okay? You're on. Who's going to start off the findings?
Alan.
Alan.
Alan. We've elected Alan.
Okay. Alan, well, let's...
Step forward, lad.
If I can fire the first question at you, Alan, a lot of people ask us how we sort of make it into commercial radio. Can we have a bit of, you know, your sort of past history, how you first came to the station? Because you've been with us, what, just over a year, haven't you?
About 14 or 15 months, yes. Good evening, by the way, good evening. How did I get into Radio City? Interesting question, long time ago now. I think it started October 65, and I was listening to the station one day. I listened to the station quite a few months before I actually joined, and this charming young man came on the air and said, "We have a disc jockey vacancy. If you think you are suitable, please write in and send a tape." So I thought, well, I'll have a go. I would never get the job, but I might at least try. You know, there's no harm in trying. So I did try. Sent in a tape, and 3 months later, I got a little letter saying, "You might possibly be suitable. Come out and have a go." So I did, and here I am.
Ian McRae has joined us. I wonder, Ian, if we can sort of pass, if we can pass on to you now, Ian.
Yes.
How do you think Prime Minister Wilson is taking this event to Radio City at the present time?
Well, as Prime Minister of your country, I have some very interesting, forthright things to say, but I can't think of any.
The next DJ, who's sitting around our little round table in the newsroom at the moment, that's Paul Cramer. Now, I first met Paul in the London office, and he was just coming out to the station. Paul, how did this all come about?
He doesn't know.
How did it all come about? Well,
well, let's have it. What were you doing before you joined Radio City, and what made you come into commercial radio?
You can't tell them that.
Well, for about 2 years, I worked with a film company, from anything as a sound recordist to a film director. And I sort of got in a bit of a rut with this job.
What was her name?
And I felt...
Oh, rut,
yes. He never stops, does he? And I thought, you know, I thought, commercial radio, yes, this is great. Let's have a bash at it.
I've been banging ever since.
So this was it, you know, and after an audition tape being sent in, they said, "We'll go out for a trial." So far I've never been off the station.
You're still a trial.
I'm still on sixpence a day.
I think a piece of music now. And Ian has had the suggestion of playing a record, which I've always had to more or less tell disc jockeys, new disc jockeys, when they come out to the station, and they say, "What records do we play?" And we tell them what kind of format to play, but I always tell them that there is a certain record which they mustn't play, and that is the Fortunes singing "You've Got Your Troubles," because this is a signal to our friends on shore that if we ever play this record, it means that either somebody is ill out here, very dangerously ill, or it means that something terrible has gone wrong and would we have help as soon as possible. Well, now, at one particular occasion, the person that I forgot to tell us about was Ian McRae, isn't that right? Yeah. And of course, Ian McRae comes on the air and says, "Right now, here's a Radio City Gold Nodal and plays the Fortunes, You've Got Your Troubles." I sort of did my tiny nut and sort of went and into the loo for about 2 hours. And
what are talking
but
about
nobody,
that, Tom?
It's, yeah. But nobody heard it. Nobody heard it. But
Ian, I was seriously ill at the time.
Ian has got the idea that we should play it now. Is there any particular thing that you want to add to this, Ian?
Yes. I wouldn't mind a job, so if anyone's listening...
No, just the thought is there. We thought we'd play it, but make sure we must... reassure our friends ashore that nothing at present, at this stage, is drastically wrong. Tom is just a little bit sick, but nothing to worry about, right?
It seems incredible to me, and I'm going to put my own case forward first of all, if I might, because I'll probably get into trouble for saying this, but it seems ridiculous that in June of last year, when we had all the tragic events on Radio City, in June of last year, the police told me, and they told Mrs. Calvert, and they told her late husband, Reg, that they could do nothing about the men out here for the simple reason we were outside the police's jurisdiction. Now, how is it that 6 or 7 months later, the GPO now summons us and get away with it? They win the case by saying that we are within territorial waters. Now, if the police can't help us 6 or 7 months ago, you know, and they have still said that if the station is raided again, which is still quite possible, they still can't help us, but they can fine us £100 and they can shut us off the air. Now, this to me, and I don't profess to be sort of politically minded, but this to me, there seems to be something definitely wrong with the British law system at the present time. And I think something which I never realised, in actual fact, ladies and gentlemen, is something that Ian McRae pointed out to me a few weeks ago now, but I never realised it. But what is it, Ian? You told me there's something like, everybody seems to think that in England it's just the place where there are pirate radio stations, but in actual fact, isn't this right? There are 300 pirate radio stations, in actual fact, in Europe at this present time.
That's right. We are no more pirates than they are. And this includes, we very often say, well, I love saying this, Vatican Radio is not in the agreement. Neither is the complete American Armed Forces Network or the BBC-run British Forces Network. They are just as much pirating the airwaves as we supposedly are.
What about Ross? Ross isn't saying much. Ross, have you got any particular views? Although you haven't been in the country very long, you must have some kind of views that you want to put forward at this time.
Well, actually, I can only reiterate on what Alan and Paul have said. Being an outsider, in a way, I feel a little removed from the effects of this. But I think it just goes to show that the English people are getting more easily misled by people in higher places. I think it just goes to show that the English man's really losing his backbone if they can let this sort of thing happen. Because time after time, people have said, commercial radio is it. We all listen. It's great. It's fantastic. Yet nobody has yet been game enough outside the industry to stand up and say, we want commercial radio. And this to me is just signifies how much control the government has got over people's thoughts in England this day.
Very quickly, lads, we have 5.5 minutes time left. If I can just have a quick rundown of all the people who we'd like to sort of say thank you very much indeed for the people who have worked.
I haven't told you what I'm going to do yet.
I'd like to thank, first of all, of course, Mrs. Calvert. Say hi to her two daughters, Candy and Susan. Also in the London office, Jill and John Wildman. Who do a lot of hard work, also the sales staff, and of course our very competent boatman, that's Freddie Downs, who's probably listening in. Probably see you tomorrow, Fred. And
six
to
the
and Mr. and Mrs. Pine, Mr. and Mrs. Pine, who of course put up the DJs when, put up with them, I should say, at their house in Whitstable when the DJs come down for the night. And also, of course, not forgetting technicians Phil Perkins, Ian West, Graham Horn, Bill Price, and DJs, that's Alan, Ian, Paul, RWB, Adrian Love, and Eric Martin, who we haven't mentioned. Of course, Sam, our two lads who used to work out here as chefs, Leslie and Barry, who apparently are starting up a coffee bar in Whitstable.
Any jobs?
Good luck to them, too.
Yes, indeed. Good luck to Barry and Leslie and their coffee bar, which they're setting up. We shall probably be coming into the coffee bar. I'd love a cup of coffee, but for a job!
For a cup of tea, mate.
I still haven't told him what I'm going to do.
Come on, Paul. We've got 1.5 minutes, Paul, I think, lads, to go. Paul. So, very quickly.
Paul hasn't told us what he's going to do yet. Come on, Paul, tell us. Astound us.
I haven't the vaguest notion of what I'm going to do.
Thank you, Paul. Back to you, Tom.
Okay.
I'm out of a job.
Okay. Well, thanks very much indeed, lads. This pile star, which
is... we weren't going anywhere.
We should have made it 2 hours, in actual fact. It's 4 minutes before 12 midnight, ladies and gentlemen. I haven't rehearsed this. I don't know what to say. But for all the lads out here on Radio City, for us, at the present time anyway, the party really is over. And the time right now on Radio City, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly 12 midnight. So from Alan Clark.
Well, what can you say? Simply, goodbye, and many thanks to everyone. I've enjoyed my spell on Radio City, and keep in touch, okay?
Paul Cramer.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to say a very good night to everybody and thank them for a most enjoyable 10 months, and I hope that the listeners do something anyway to get us back on the air, because tomorrow morning, when you switch on, there'll be nothing on 299.
RWB.
Thanks very much, Tom, Paul, Alan, Ian, and everyone. I've had a great time. I've learned a terrible lot about what people can do under extreme conditions, and I've really enjoyed myself. I'm looking forward to something in the future. I don't know what at this stage. And for me, it's bye.
Ian McRae.
Well, just goodbye and good morning, and thanks for everything in the past. Been wonderful listeners. Without sounding too sentimental here, all the best of luck to you, and goodbye for now. We'd like to just very quickly, if I can here, Tom, perhaps, I know the other stations are listening to us right now. We'd like to sort of pass on any sort of goodbye messages, you know.
Sure.
We'll listen to them after we go off the air in a few minutes' time, okay?
So, fine.
Bye for now.
Right, well, many thanks indeed to all the lads, and of course, our two technicians on duty at the moment, Graham, and also to Phil, and also our two DJs on shore at the moment, Adrian and Eric, and our other technicians, Bill and Ian West. For me, Tom Edwards, for the very last time on Radio City, it's a very good night to you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless.
and thank you for being a marvellous audience. Good night and goodbye.
Sunday, the 16th of May, 1965. Following the success of the other offshore stations, Clacton businessman Reg Tor, together with engineer George Short, started Radio Pamela. The station was to transmit only on Sundays from an 18-foot motorboat, principally playing pop music and carrying adverts for Reg Tor's business, TD Television. But after a few weeks, the idea was dropped, and George Short went to see Eric Sullivan.
And then George Short came along to me some weeks afterwards, quite appalled with the idea that they were going to drop everything and nothing was going to come of it at all. So we decided, or I decided, that with his knowledge of technology and mine of business, that we could get something off the ground.
Big T, Big T, Big T, Big T, stay tuned to Radio Tower.
So we decided that we'd do test transmissions and places that we would go. So we decided, number one, that it'd be the Ruff's Tower. And we went out there, we hired a boat, it took us out, and I went there with Johnny Walters and a friend of his. And we tried to board the tower, but the weather wasn't in our favour, and we couldn't. So we decided that the next weekend we would come out with equipment, boarding equipment, and equipment to keep us alive and board the thing. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, this information was then transferred to Percy Scadden, who in turn informed Radio Caroline, who took over the fault. So then we were left with only one other alternative. That was the sunk head.
About a week after this, Eric Sullivan and crew boarded the Sunk Head Tower, and George Short set up the transmitter for the first tests on 216 metres.
Tower radio testing, tower radio testing. Here is tower radio testing on 216 metres in the medium wave band. Tower radio testing, tower radio testing, tower radio testing.
Well, we looked for anybody that was really adventurous. Anybody really, we had the right person with the engineering qualifications that could vet any further engineers that we needed. Johnny Walters, I looked to him, really, because he was a man of many voices and could be used quite comfortably as a DJ.
Eventually, Eric Sullivan contacted me again. I said, you know, are you still interested, John? So I said, yes. So he said, when would you be free to go out? So I said, more or less any time. I forget the exact time, but anyway, one day he approached me and said, can you make it at the weekend, I believe it was? I said, right. So he said, we would be leaving from Burnham. Well, the first time we went, we didn't get on. It was John Bolter and Terry Lambeth. They were on board looking like a couple of hermits, and I looked up at this fort from the girl Betty and says, oh my God, no, I can't get up there. Now, it's a very frightening experience, really, because you see this giant monster, you know, protruding from the North Sea, and you think to yourself, you've got to get on this. Anyway, they put this straight ladder hooked over the top of the fort on the gantry down, which went below the sea level, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was about 9 inches wide, and you had to sort of get on the bow of the boat. When someone said jump, you jumped. If you hesitated, you was in the drink.
There are vacancies on this station for vision engineers, transmission radio engineers, and DJs. If you have the suitable qualifications for any of these posts, would you please contact Mr. Eric D. Sullivan, Vision Projects, Trinity Street, Colchester. Telephone Colchester 6741.
I'd listened to the station quite a while, and one day they were asking for DJs and other staff. I told my family and friends I'm thinking of applying. I think they all thought Bill Rawlings has gone completely nutty. Anyway, took the tape up, made a demo tape, took it up to Colchester, went into the office in Colchester, and they played it back. And Eric Sullivan said, well, it's not too bad, you can go out there. A week after this, I'm standing on the deck of a tug called the Agamar from Felixstowe, and we're pulling alongside the Sunkhead Towers. And, you know, I can sort of remember now thinking to myself, God, you know, just, you know, what am I doing in a situation like this? I shouldn't be here, you know, this is ridiculous. So over comes a ladder, and you've just got to run up this ladder. Bit different when I got to the top to what I had expected. I expected something a bit more plush, and there's this, well, rather untidy people who haven't had a shave for a few days standing around there. And a conducted tour of the fort was in hand, so tagged along with all the new guys that went out there on that trip. And we saw the generator, you know, a little single-cylinder, petrol-driven thing, charging these batteries like there was no tomorrow. The transmitter was an old wireless set 52, held together by bits of hardboard, but it was getting the signal out, and after all, that was part of the business that we were doing.
Car radio, the local radio station. These are test engineer and test only. Please send reception reports to Vision Projects, Trinity Street, Colchester. This is Tower Radio testing. Tower Radio testing. Tower Radio testing, your first local radio station. Please send all test report signals to Vision Projects, Trinity Street, Colchester. Tower Radio, 9¾ miles from Walton-on-Naze.
Dave Simpson came to me, not as an employee. He came as wanting a cut into the business and become a director. And I was out of the office at the time, and I'd been out some considerable time. I think I was one of my journeys to London, or I'd been to the town, was on my way back. I can't really remember which. But I know I arrived in my office to find a rather Western-type gentleman sitting there with a beard and a sombrero, wanted to invest money and become something to do with Radio Tower. And I thought, well, there's a mad American sitting in front of me with a carrier bag with pound notes in it, wants to invest in me. Who am I to say no? And from that day on, I think we hit it off, Dave and I. There was something there that said that we could get on. And he wanted the practical side of the business, as did I. I wasn't really totally enjoying the financial side or the running of the advertising. I was more interested in the practical side, I suppose. And this is where we really sort of met each other halfway. He wanted in. I needed the money. He needed to be in that business. For what reason, only he will ever know.
Well, I saw it on Anglia Television. And I saw the romantic side of becoming a disc jockey, and because it was the in thing, everybody was interested in this sort of a local radio operation thing, you see. So I thought, well, I'll be part of it.
Once I got on the fort, the first person I met was John Waters, and John introduced me to George Short, and there was two other guys there, John Bolter and Terry Lambert, who were the transmission sort of maintenance men. They looked after all the generators and stuff like that. George had the idea that I was going to be the transmission engineer, and where he got this idea from, but I sort of got him showing me how to turn this on and turn that on. And just after he had, he said, well, go into the studio, you can put a couple of records on. And the next thing I know is John Waters, Dave Simpson and myself are left on the fort, and George Short is gone. I had a sort of basic knowledge of transmitters, very basic as well, and was left to get just sorted out from there. We managed to get out test transmissions, but gradually the quality went down and down, and I couldn't really work it out as to get the signal back any better.
Well, I expected to see something up to date, like just roughly an example, like a big freezer, refrigerator set up there, all a match system with a big aerial and, you know, being able to blast anywhere just about in this part of the world. But, of course, what a letdown when we got there, huh? A little Jap engine run away there, when it would run, when it wasn't out of fuel or out of spark or something.
Well, I didn't know. I mean, someone could have showed me a matchbox and said, this will transmit 500 miles. I probably would have believed them. But at first I thought, yeah, everything's all right. Of course, when we didn't get reception reports or dodgy signals, you know, were coming through, then I started to think different.
Radio Tower is the first local radio station in the country. These are low-powered engineering tests only. Regular programs will begin in the next few days. Radio Tower testing on 222. Radio Tower testing on 222 meters. Here is Radio Tower testing on 222 meters. Television transmissions, test transmissions, will begin next week on Channel 5. This won't require the addition of any extra aerial to the viewer. Channel 4 aerials are usually aligned to the Channel 4 transmitter, which is swiftly placed in conjunction with our station. So at no cost at all, you should be able to view our programs. Test patterns will be transmitted early next week. This is on Channel 5. Radio Tower is your first local radio station. Under the policy of this station, any inquiries whatsoever should be forwarded to Vision Projects. Vision Projects, Trinity Street, Colchester.
It was now December 1965, and the original transmitter engineer George Short had left the station. He had for some time been suffering from stomach trouble, and on one occasion had to call for assistance from the Wharton lifeboat.
All right, Thames, 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 Wharton lifeboat, over.
This is Thames, Coast Guard, over.
Hello, Thames. We now have this casualty in sight. We can hear them calling for help. We're now approaching, over.
This is Thames, roger.
This podcast is made by myself. I'm Peter John in English Media. Title music is by Croatian artist Blasco and is published under Creative Commons. You can find this podcast on dmpodcast.net, DM is for Daily Minutes, and on several other platforms. De internetfaciliteiten en studio hardware voor Daily Minutes worden gesponsord door 70MHzShop.nl, 70MHzShop.nl.
Daily Minutes Podcast. Whoever hears this is crazy.
En microfoon naar retour.
This is Slow Scan Radio. Good afternoon, this is Peter John. We bring you experiments with Slow Scan TV images, mostly photos, and also several kinds of data transmission using FLDigi. We have a show sending some data and mostly SSTV images. The images can be received with your normal radio. The easiest way is to use a smartphone, holding it simply close to the receiver speaker. You will need an app like Robot 36 for Android or CQ SSTV for iOS then. There are also good programs for PC. More info about that you can find on our website www.slowscanradio.com. www.slowscanradio.com. For the data, preferably use FLDigi, although other programs most probably will work as well. Slow Scan Radio is copyright 2018, excluding rights of featured items and any music. Website is www.slowscanradio.com. Mail address is xray@xraydeltavictor.mikeecho.com.